A pause today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Rebecca Wee.
And I'm Don Wooten. We're getting back into the reviewing and previewing business today on Scribble.
Read any
good books lately?
Oh, I wish I could get to the ones I have stacked beside the bed. But yes, always. Let's see. I guess what I'd love to do is promote this year, well, it's last year's Best American Poetry version, which comes out every year in the fall. So I often use it in my intro to poetry classes, but I haven't read it either because it comes out, you know, right before. And so I kind of get to read it along with the students. So 2022 is being assembled right now, but we have 2021. And Tracy K. Smith, who's a poet, a remarkable poet, was the guest editor. And the guest editor every year gets some help, but they comb through all the journals online.
That's a pretty printed, thick book.
Well, they get to pick 75 of what they call the best poetry of the year. So it's always kind of hot off the press. And depending on the guest editor, it might be experimental, it might be traditional, it might, you know, they're sort of drawn to the poetry they admire best. But this year's, which we are using in my intro to poetry classes, has been really full of powerful writers, and a lot of them have to do with, they've been good for African American History Month. There's one in here just titled George Floyd, and the thing that's cool about this collection is that every year you just get a little snippet. You get one poem per poet, 75 of them. Who's writing and who's publishing and where are they publishing? And what my students like is that at the back of the book, the poets themselves get to say what they thought they were doing or what they intended to do with that poem that's in the book. Plus, it just has all the addresses and the editors for different journals. So anybody okay. Who's interested in sending work out.
So the name of that is?
It is The Best American Poetry. This one is 2021, and Tracy K. Smith is the guest editor. David Lehman is the series editor, started this couple decades ago. It comes out every year. And both the guest editor and Lehman give kind of intro and foreword to, usually the guest editors are trying to explain their rationale for the 75 poems they picked. And, you know, everybody comments, you can't do this. There's, you know, you can't choose the best poems of a given year.
Oh,
but
it's like choosing the best book.
Exactly.
You know, I picked up a book how long ago? I can't remember. When was this book? Well, anyway, it caught my attention, called Sea People, The Puzzle of Polynesia.
Huh.
And it's by Christina Thompson, who is married to a Polynesian husband. And when you think about it, you look at the size of the Pacific, and the people who inhabit it are all one people. They're not different at all. They have varieties of the same language. They use tattooing.
Yep.
And when they were first discovered by Europeans, and she gives a history of that, they were puzzled. How did they get here?
Uh-huh.
And when they came to Easter Island, the most remote of them, they were amazed because there were no trees, which meant that the people were trapped because they couldn't make boats to leave.
Oh.
And everywhere else, wherever they went, there were boats all around.
Oh, how interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so this is part of my New Step reading.
Okay.
I'm working my way through the book a chapter at a time.
Yeah.
And it happens that when I get on the New Step in the morning, I pick up the book, I read a chapter, and I have used up 15 minutes of exercise.
Oh, nice.
Yes, it is.
Very nice.
But before I got into that, they put out these little books. And this is the Little Book of Writer's Wisdom. You find them at Barnes & Noble.
Sure.
They usually have a table of small books.
Yep.
And I picked it up, and I've been thumbing through that, and I find that the best thing to do is just pick it up and open it.
Yeah, to random pages.
And it's what authors have to say about writing. David Edding says, start early and work hard. A writer's apprenticeship usually involves writing a million words, which are then discarded, before he's almost ready to begin. That takes a while. And Jola Pulitzer, put it before them briefly so they will read it, clearly so they will appreciate it, picturesquely so they will remember it, and above all, accurately so they will be guided by its light.
That's nice.
How about that? Let's see. Here's Ray Bradbury. Write a short story every week. If it's not possible to write, it's not possible to write 52 bad short stories in a row.
Oh, I suspect it is.
But that's an interesting thing. I love quotations.
I do too.
And that's a little book of writer's wisdom. Let's see who put that together. Edited by Stephen D. Price.
Okay.
And one of those many little books.
And for those of you who can't actually see it, it is a little book. It's a little blue book that
Don's holding.
Little blue book.
It's kind of thick, but it's...
Yeah.
And I notice there's just a bit of carelessness in it.
Oh.
Because I found the same quote in two different locations twice.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Are there sections? Are there sections like quotes on...
Yeah, there are sections, and they do make a kind of sense. Because, let's see if I can get to this right.
So did the duplicated ones fit in a couple different sections, perhaps?
I think there were different sections. The sections are their inner music, why we write and read. Two, but what are they doing in that cottage, how we write. Show me the glint of light, writing fiction. As one who carries the light bulb, writing poetry. They ripen with keeping, letter writing. Save the tale, editors and critics. No man but a blockhead, writing for money. And open a vein, a smile or two, along with some good advice.
Oh, yep. Well,
it's nice to know some people have as much trouble writing as I do.
Everybody has trouble writing. I think, the fallacy that, a writer can just sit down and it just pours out of them, I think... most people who know a writer, if they're not writers themselves, know that once in a while that happens. Once in a while you get given something and you're just trying to keep up with the idea. But that might happen twice in a lifetime, and all the rest of it is the quotation you read first, writing all those words and then throwing them all out and then starting over.
Then you may be ready to begin.
To start, yeah.
You're working on a book too.
Yeah, I just started working my way through reading it, not writing it. Yeah, I got really interested in this after listening to an NPR interview with the author, whose name is Carl Eric Fisher, Eric with a K. And the title of it is The Urge, Our History of Addiction. And I think it was just because the author was so articulate. He was really wise, but he was really compassionate and humane on the subject, and had... I haven't gotten far enough into it to give you much beyond... I thought what I would share is he himself, Carl Fisher, is an addiction physician and a bioethicist and a professor of clinical psychiatry at Columbia University. So this book just came out in January. It just came out last month. And as I said, when he talked about writing it and the process of his own kind of family history with addiction and his interest in it, I was just really moved by his intelligence, but also his generosity of spirit. You know, his here's just in his little intro. I'll read just a bit of it. He says, "I'm 29 years old, writing in my journal in a sloppy felt-tip pen, in parentheses, no ballpoints are allowed, trying to understand how I went from being a newly minted physician in a psychiatry residency program at Columbia University to a psychiatric patient at Bellevue, the city's notorious public hospital." So you right away get his own story and his own kind of how confounded he was to have gone from being on one side of the wall to the other side of the wall. And that's what set him off to study the history of how people become addicted. And another thing I really liked in the beginning was his attention to language. He's addressing how important it is to talk about mental health using certain terms rather than other terms because of what language can do to our attitudes. So as a writer, I just got interested in the fact that he was paying close attention to that as he wrote the book. So I, like I said, I haven't gotten very far, but he's a beautiful writer. He's,
Isn't it interesting how often somebody's problem presents itself as a solution?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
They will be so impacted by something that they will react to it in a positive way.
And decide, I'm going to learn where this comes from and why it happens and why we... He, on one of the book jackets, kind of says, here we are in the midst of an opioid crisis that we can't seem to make much progress with. And that, too, as a physician, he got interested in trying to figure out what's going on.
Well, you know, we've been, and we don't do this often enough, we invite people to send in comments about books that they like, they've read, and you do that on the internet at Contact Scribble. That part is easy to remember. Contact Scribble, then there's a period, and then 1014@gmail.com. Now, the thing is... we not only receive suggestions and reviews, I got a book. And it came from someone who'd been a guest on this program. Matter of fact, both of the LaBellas, John and Teresa, were on the program at one time. And she writes mostly romance novels. But then, and I've never had this explained to me, they moved to Nova Scotia. I don't know anybody who's moved to Nova Scotia.
Well, that might be the reason to go.
But while she was there, it didn't take long. She puts out a novel, kind of a mystery thriller, called Capital Strings. And it's about politics in Canada. And the deal is there's a... The action starts at the end of 2022. So she's projecting just a little bit. And it's about a prime minister whose name is Evan Reed. And I want to read you part of a statement that he makes.
Sure. So this just came out.
Yeah. Okay. It's relatively new. He's talking about a bill that he has to put up about things that he wants to deal with socially. He's talking about illnesses and so on, and he said, in the midst of that unimaginable health dread, the unthinkable happened in Nova Scotia. A man resolved, whatever his grudge was with the world, by masquerading as an officer of the law and killing innocent people. While Parliament was meeting virtually due to the pandemic stay-at-home order, I followed through with the first part of a campaign promise and introduced a measure by order in council from cabinet that banned the possession and sale of assault-style weapons in Canada. Owners of these weapons had 2 years to turn them into police, sell them to buyers outside Canada with a permit, or participate in a Canadian government buyback of the weapons without penalty or prosecution. Parliament has yet to approve the buyback option, and the resulting one-year extension of the amnesty is about to expire. What's next will likely further mobilize and entrench the opposition. The second part of my government's gun control campaign promise gives municipalities the option to ban handguns within their boundaries. But what I intend to do with the amendment to the law entered on first reading in November is ban the sale and ownership of all firearms that have no purpose but to kill people. This could be my last battle as Prime Minister. If it is, I will leave knowing I did my job. I kept Canadians safe. The book is about what transpires as this moves into action. And it's told really through a couple, Geraldine Connor, who is chief of staff to the prime minister, and her significant other, Alec Martin, who is a director of Parliamentary Protective Service. And, of course, the first chapter starts with people plotting to do something to oppose this.
Yeah.
And then it moves on from there. And I'm not going to tell you how it ends, because that's a hot topic everywhere.
Well, say the title again so everyone can hear
it. It's Capital Strings by Teresa Labella.
Excellent.
And Teresa followed that up by recommending all kinds of books. And we have some of those recommendations, principally from Teresa and Dee Anderson. And there were some that were sent in earlier that I want to revisit if we have time. But it's interesting that the choices that Teresa makes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You have one there.
Yeah, The Spoon Stealer, which is by Leslie Crewe, spelled C-R-E-W-E, which is described as being a Nova Scotia farm girl. Emmeline Darling was born in a basket of freshly washed sheets, ready to be hung up and dried on a clothesline, which is a very interesting phrasing there. Her mother never forgave her, is the line there. So it's described as just being about family tragedy and friendship by way of chronicling this life of this woman who goes her own way in a time when women didn't really have that sort of freedom.
Yeah, we have, let's see, what all do I have here? Oh, I have another one from Teresa. And this is one that came out last year, State of Terror, Hillary Rodham Clinton and Louise Penny. Louise Penny is a really good writer.
Yeah.
And she has this Armand Gamache series. And he normally is in his own little Canadian area. But the as she says, the plot and premise of this not-so-far-fetched fictional collaboration began with a simple question. Canadian crime writer, creator of the Inspector Armand Gamache series, Louise Penny, asked Hillary Rodham Clinton what, as U.S. Secretary of State, woke her up at 3 a.m. This novel details the nightmarish scenario at a relentless pace that never lets one rest. Written before Donald Trump's 2020 election defeat, and the insurrection of January 6th, and the withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan, State of Terror foretells the fallout of the fictional former President Eric Dunn's erratic policies on international diplomacy and the rapid resurgence of the Taliban. That obviously is Donald Trump.
Yeah.
But anyway, that book has been out, and by now it's available at a discount.
So yes.
If you're looking for a good deal, that might do it.
All right.
Excellent. How about someone from Dee Anderson?
Oh, yeah. So Dee Anderson sent in several. One that seems quite lovely, but I haven't read it myself, is the title is Lost and Found Cat, : The True Story of Kunkush's Incredible Journey, by Doug Coons and Amy Schrodes, which is basically a story of a refugee family trying to smuggle their cat out of Iraq, and it gets away from them while they're in transit. And after 4 months of many people looking for this cat on their behalf, they are reunited. But you can apparently find this online with the author reading the book. If you Google, this is what we were told, Google Lost and Found Cat Read Aloud online. But it's a picture book and beautifully illustrated and based on an actual event with a happy ending instead of some of the hardship that is always in the news.
Dee Anderson also had a kind word to say for Katherine Johnson's My Remarkable Journey. You may remember this amazing woman because she's been featured in the news. A movie has been made, won an Oscar called The Hidden Figures. Her work at NASA. And she became the go-to mathematician.
Yep.
The astronauts were given the results of the computers, and they would always say, run it by Katherine. If Katherine said the computer was right, then they accepted it.
Yep.
And at the age of 97, Barack Obama awarded her the Presidential Medal of Freedom for her pioneering work as a mathematician on those flights into space. And, of course, that blockbuster movie.
Yep.
And now you can read her memoirs, My Remarkable Journey by Katherine Johnson. And that is readily available.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, let's see. This is also Dee Anderson suggesting The Kindest Lie by Nancy Johnson. And this is set in 2008, the inauguration of President Barack Obama. Is bringing in new hope. In Chicago, Ruth Tuttle, an Ivy League-educated black engineer, is married to a kind, successful man who wants to start a family. So it says in the review, returning home, Ruth discovers the Indiana factory town of her youth is plagued by unemployment, racism, and despair, and she begins digging into the past and unexpectedly befriends Midnight, a young white boy who is also adrift and looking for connection. So it's described as being really powerful, The Kindest Lie, capturing the divide between black and white communities.
You know, I want to go back to a couple of things, a couple of reviews that I read that have attracted my attention.
Okay.
One is Watergate by Garrett M. Graff. Now, you would think we've had enough of Watergate, but this book really lays bare everything in very clear language. And there's a great review of it in the New York Times by Douglas Brinkley. And he has this to say, a lively writer, Graff explores the dramatic scope of the Waterscape saga through its participants, politicians, investigators, journalists, whistleblowers, and at center stage, Nixon himself, power broker extraordinaire, five-time fixture on Republican presidential tickets between 1952 and 1972, and holder of the record for most appearances on the cover of Time magazine, 55 issues.
Whoa!
For all his accomplishments, the 37th president was a man of deep contradictions, a law and order candidate who flouted the law, an insecure man with a deep reservoir of hubris, a traditional values president who drank to excess and cursed like a tailor. This book, I think, will probably be the book on Watergate. And it's a new one by Douglas Brinkley, and it's simply called Watergate, A New History. I think you might be interested in that.
Is this one you have read?
No, it's in your to-read pile. These are my previews. And there's another one, True Story, What Reality TV Says About Us by Danielle J. Lindemann. She takes reality TV and says it's a reflection of us and we reflect it. I have no doubt of that.
Yes.
Because we are deeply influenced by what we see.
Yeah.
And since when you watch television, your mind is usually a blank, the stuff just pours in. But the reviewer, James Walcott, has this to say about reality TV. Cheap to produce, fast to shoot, exhausting to perform, edited in a shard crossword of reaction shots, reality TV proved itself an expedient, maneuverable vehicle optimized for speed, sensation, and easy replication. With its rotating clusters of housewives, Kardashians, deck crews, dance moms, teen moms, top chefs, top models, 90-day fiancés, bachelors, bachelorettes, apprentices, house hunters, and drag racers, reality TV, once primetime's tacky tag-along cousin, has mutated into a real fake pro-am multiverse.
Oh, my.
I love that phrase.
That's a great description of that last line. I would be very interested to read that because I simply don't understand reality TV, but I agree with you that it no doubt reflects things about ourselves that we would rather not know.
Well, you know, I had, as a young person, had a very fortunate thing happen to me. And I've talked about this before. I was at the Royal Theater, which is about 2.5 blocks away from my home in Memphis. Mm-hmm. And I loved Frank Buck movies. They're about expeditions in Africa. Mm-hmm. And one of them, Frank Buck was alone, and he was coming around a relatively clear space, but there was a bush there, and as he walked by it, a python or a constrictor of some kind bit his arm, and he was struggling with it. And I was thinking, why doesn't anybody help him? Well, he's all alone. Oh, wait, the cameraman is
there.
They're
filming it. Uh-huh.
And it dawned on me, it's all a fake.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there was nothing real about this at all.
Well, that's the thing I've never understood with, you know, the island, when they're on an island, and are they going to survive? And you think, there'd be some lawsuits if they really are eaten by a python.
I think the thing that's interesting about reality TV is that they have script writers.
Yeah.
Now you tell me how real that is.
I know.
But Danielle is kind of soft on reality TV. She goes back and forth. But the reviewer definitely is not.
Is not. Okay.
But anyway, those are just some of the reviews that we have received. Principally from Dee Anderson, Teresa Labella. We had some earlier from Merrick Castellan and Daniel Tellerud, which I found very interesting. And we'd love to hear your opinions on books and on the program itself. Get to us at contactscribble.com, don't forget that, 1014@gmail.com. Once again, that's contactscribble.com. 1014@ gmail.com. 1014 happens to be the date on which this program began. And right now, we're at the point where this program ends. Thank you very much for joining us today, and we'll get back to regular conversations. Poetry Month is in prospect, and we're going to have a great time with that. We hope you'll join us for more Scribbles. Thank you.